Juanita, we ended the last interview talking about you getting on the train to come to California.
Okay.
And I'd like you to finish that story for me. And I want to ask you if your two sons were with you as well as your youngest daughter.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, they were. My eldest daughter came out with my late husband.
Yes.
And during the week of October 24th, it was her 18th birthday. And so they came ahead of time to see if he could get a job and get a place to live, because we had the four children and a dog. And so then when they found out that he thought he could get a place, all right, but the woman won $90 a month at that time, and that was high, and she wanted to take out about half the furniture. So he didn't like it very well. So my late brother-in-law, he says, well, Roy, why don't you go buy a place? Because Juanita's been wanting to come west all these years. And he says, go. He says, I'll give you the money to pay down on it. They came over here because my brother-in-law knew the people that were building these houses here. And this house and the house on the LeCur, the last house over there, was the only two available. But this had been spoken for, but when they found out that they did not work for the government, they wasn't supposed to sell to them. So they had to give it up, but they didn't move in. So then we got it first. And then when I came out, why, it was November the 13th I got here in 1942.
You started to tell me one time about something that happened in Chicago on the trip on the way out.
Well, we had to change planes. Oh, yeah, I remember now. And I didn't send them a telegram that I was on my way until I got to Chicago. They knew, well, I had written a telegram to, or sent a telegram to them that I was going to have a complete sale, and just as soon as I had the complete sale, I was ready to get on the train and the way we was coming. Well, then I didn't say any more until we got to Chicago. That was on a Tuesday. Got to Chicago then, and I sent a telegram. I had to lay over a little bit to change trains, and I sent them a telegram then that I was on the way. Well, when they got the telegram, see, it took us about 3 days or more to come. So when they got the telegram, well, it tickled my daughter, it tickled my late brother-in-law. He laughed about it. He says, Juanita says, I don't know. She's pretty courageous to bring those children out here and don't know where she's gone for sure. Well, what I had figured on, I thought if they didn't have a place for us, we could send the boys to the YM. And Marilyn and I would go to the YW and stay overnight till we meet the folks, you know. So then my late brother-in-law and my daughter met us in L.A. And he says, well, we'll take the part of them home to their apartment, and then he'd take some of us over here to the house. And then we'd go back and get the rest of the family. So he brought some of us over here. But I think he took the little girl over to the apartment and the dog. And my sister gave the dog a bath. Oh, she was so black and dirty, just soot and everything. And she'd give her a bath, and then when they waited till my late husband got off work about midnight, well, then they, my late brother-in-law brought the rest of them over here. We had nothing in the house. We slept on the floor, but the folks had given us blankets that we could, and some pillows that we could use. So then that was on a Friday evening, and they got here after, they got here the, you see, on the next day, that'd be on Saturday morning, but I got in here at 13th on Good Friday, and I always considered that very good lucky for me. I've always been pretty lucky on the 14th, if I do say so, on Friday. Well, anyway, my sister and my late husband, they just kind of blew their top. They said, why on earth did that woman come out here till we let her know about coming? Because he said on his telegram, don't come till I notify you, and that was the morning that I was having the sale. So someone says, oh, what you going to do, Juanita? I says, I'm going to get on the train as soon as I can get rid of all this stuff and get enough money that I'm going to get on the train the way I'm going. I says, I don't care whether they can get any place for us or not. I said, I'll find a place. And some of them laughed, some of them thought it was awful. And my mother says, go on, Juanita. I said, well, I'm going. I said, you know, I've always wanted to get out of here. And I said, I'm going, regardless. Well, my brother took me on to the train station. Well, when we got to the train station, we'd already had our tickets. See, we got our tickets for that day, and I had to use them, or maybe I'd lose out, you know. So I had to get there at a certain time, and I had to get the checks cashed. Well, the first place I went, they wouldn't cash them because they didn't know me. Well, another place that we'd bought a lot of stuff from, and my husband's people had bought a lot of stuff from, they knew us, and I told them, I said, we still have our home, or the house, and the property back there in Indiana. And I said, ask them to cash the checks, and I said, if any of them bounces, I said, let me know, and I'll let you know as soon as I can where I'm going to be to take care of everything. So they give me the money right off the reel. And that was fine, because I had to have the money, because I couldn't use the checks on the train. And my brother had to go try to find a box to put the doggy in. They didn't tell me we had to box up the dog. That was bad, too, because the box was a little bit small. The poor little thing, she had to be cramped in that box in the caboose, I guess they kept the dogs at that time. But anyway, when we got to L.A., my late brother-in-law and my daughter met us. First thing my daughter says, Mom, Daddy bought a house. I said, what did you say? She says, Daddy bought a house. I turned around to my brother-in-law. I said, did he? He laughed and he said, yes. He said, when you decided you was a-coming, why, we told him he better do something right away because you was a-coming anyhow. I had always wanted to go west. And they said, well, you know, they told my husband, they said, well, you know, when he's always wanted to come west, so now's a good time for him to come. I never so thrilled, really, one of the thrilled things in my life was when they said we'd bought a house. Then I knew I was going to get to stay in California. But then when we got the house, we went on Saturday that next day and went uptown. Let's see, some of the stores were closed about noon, so we had to go early enough to, I think we got a bedroom set, and I think I ordered a couch, and something else, I forget what, stove, I believe it was. Well, they was to bring, no, I wasn't either, the couch. They was to bring the stove and the bedroom set out that day. Well, they promised to. So they did, they brought the stove out, well, we had to have a stove. And then I think maybe I got a table and chairs to go in the kitchen, I believe, if I recall. So then we got that day. Well, when they got here, the one bed, the side of it was cracked. I said, I won't have that. I said, it wasn't cracked when I paid for it. We paid cash that day. And I said, I won't have that in the house. I said, it's cracked and there's no use to take it in the house, so they had to take it back. Well, we couldn't use the bed because... But anyhow, we make out anyhow. So then we had to wait till Monday. So then they finally brought the other part of the bedstead back on Monday. Well, then I went to Sears. See, I forget where it was we bought the first part. Anyway, I went to Sears, and I ordered the van that would open up. I guess you call them the vans. That opened up like a bed. And then I ordered a bed, another bed, so the boys would have a bed. And... then I ordered a carpet. No, I ordered a rug. It wasn't a carpet. I ordered a rug. Well, I couldn't pay for all of it at that time, so I asked them about giving them a check. They said to pay one-third down, and then they would deliver. And I offered to pay the telephone call to call back to Sears to find out how we were. That is, if our credit was okay and everything was okay. So they said they wouldn't have to do that. So then we waited about a week. We didn't get it. So here comes back my canceled check from the bank. Well, boy, that was the best thing I could have. So I worked in the afternoon, so I got it in the forenoon, you know, and I had time to go uptown. So I went in there and I called for the head guy, the head manager. And I says, I ordered some things here that they were supposed to bring out right away. And he started to answer me. He first started in, he says, well, he says, you know, this is wartime, and we can't always get things out when we're supposed to. I says, well, I can understand that part, but I says, why is it that I have to wait so long to get that stuff that we need? I said, the part of the family has to lay on the floor, and I said, we'd like to have the bed and the van, because we already had one bedstead. And then he started in. He says, oh, you people from back east, you come out here and you're, I forget what all he said, but you think you're somebody and you're that and this, that, and the other. So I says, well, what you can do, he says, you go and pay for the whole amount that I owe. And he says, we'll bring it out right away. I says, no, when I make a bargain, I keep my side of the bargain. And I said, the clerk told me that I only had to pay a third down and then pay it the next month, which was all right with me and which was agreeable. Well, he said, the clerks don't always know everything. I said, well, I offered to, for him to find out if we were okay about our credit and everything, to cash a check. So then, you see what else? He started in to say some more then about we people from back east, you know. And so then pretty soon I said, you know, I don't want your stuff. I said, I want my money back from my check. And I said, I'd like to have it back right away. Well, he said, you know you can't get it back for a while. I says, all right, I'm going to be better to you than you have to me. I'm going to wait till the next day and see if my check is in the mail. And if it isn't, I'm going to a lawyer. I'll find out whether I'm so-so that you better tell me. People all around me was listening, you know. There was a lot, some of them was laughing and getting a kick out of it. So I says, then he shot off some more smart things. So I says, well, I tell you. I said, my check was good enough that you cashed it in. I said, I've got it here. He said, let me see it. I said, I wouldn't let you have a touch this check. I said, I'm going to keep it to show that you did not keep your word. And I said, I've kept my word. And I said, here, you've been telling me I don't amount to anything and I'm this and that and the other. And he said, I'll just see how much that I mean. No, he said, I didn't mean anything to it. I said, I'll just find out how much I do mean to you. And I held up my check. And, oh, he began to get shaky. He shook and he said, old lady, he don't do that. Don't go to a lawyer. Don't go to a lawyer. He says, I'm liable to lose my job. I said, why should I worry about you losing your job? I said, you didn't care about me. And you said, I didn't mean anything to you. But I said, now, do I mean anything to you? Well, he began to almost cry over it. He began to shake and began to cry. Because being a manager, you know, he could have lost his job for his smart aleck. He had no business of being so smart aleck to me. And I said to him, I said, well, I can't understand why we people are honest and we try to do right in this world, that we get the blunt of people that don't do right. But I said, why did you jump down my throat and say the things you did? I said, I won't even accept apology if you'd even attempt this apology. I said, I don't care anything about you. But I said, I'm going to do this. I'll wait one more day, and that check better be in the mail. Well, the next day, the check is in the mail. But the nicest thing about that come out of that, well, I went down and ordered some other stuff from Schultz, I think it was, and that was better grade stuff anyhow than what Sears was. But we didn't get a carpet, but we didn't get a rug on our floor for several years. But anyway, I got the divan from Schultz, and I got another bedstead, and there was something else that I'd ordered. But anyway, Schultz has accepted my part of the payment, you know, and everything's all right. So then, and one of the nicest things that came out of that was that Sears wrote me a letter, and it said that they had checked back home, and they said that, I don't know, they gave me best recommendation that anybody could ever get, that I didn't have any recommendation to begin with. So I kept that letter, but I never went back to Sears to buy for years and years and years. I was so, it really kind of hit me kind of funny, you know, to be told all that stuff when I was a stranger to them and they were strangers to me. Although I'd been in business, we had a store back home with a former trustee, and I know how some people are. And some people do jip them, but why are we held responsible for them? And that was one of the best things that ever happened to me, that I don't usually talk smart to people very often, but I held my own. But I can't get over those people around there. They thought that was the funniest thing they ever saw. Because when he began to shake like he did, and he said that he was afraid he'd lose his job, I said, well, you told me I didn't mean anything to you. I said, why should I worry about your job? I said, I'm working at Douglas, and I'm an inspector. And I said, I can't be worried about anybody else's job but my own. Oh, that was really marvelous.
How soon after you got here did you go down and apply for work at Douglas?
I went on Saturday morning, the next day, after I went uptown first on Saturday, and then I went to Douglas after I got home from being uptown and ordering some more stuff. And then I went to Douglas, and they took me on the following Monday.
How did you know that they were hiring people at Douglas? How did you know that?
Well, it was during wartime, and we understood that people were hiring them. Now, I don't know how we knew beforehand, but there was wartime, and everybody figured that people were getting jobs all the time, so I didn't have any trouble with that. And then my daughter went the same day. Well, she wasn't taken in until the following Friday. That was almost a week. But she got in right away. Well, another thing, my sister was working at Douglas at Santa Monica. She lived at Santa Monica. Maybe she had told me we could get a job. That might have been, but anyway, we figured we could get a job. And my late husband, as soon as he got here, I think it was the next day after he stayed all night after they met him, and then he went over to Wilmington, and he got in the shipyards as a shipwright. Then he got an apartment over there in Wilmington. Well, that's where he told me to come with the goods. I brought one big box of comfort and different things, the iron, and I would get some clothes and things. Made one big box of it, and that's all we had extra. But it had to go clear to Wilmington, so I had to make a trip clear to Wilmington to get it. But then when we come over here, then he left his room. He just got a room there at Wilmington, and then he ate out. So that's the way we did it, and I went to work right away. But I went in the afternoon. Now, that wasn't too good for me. I like morning.
Would you tell me about when you applied for your job, what that was like?
Well, if I recall, I went into the office. First, I signed my name, C. Juanita Bowman. The girl says, you have to sign your first name, your maiden name, and your married name. I says, I want to sign my name, C. Juanita Bowman. She tore up the paper, wouldn't accept it. So I had to sign Cleela Alva Bowman. Well, that was all right, too, in a way, but at the place, I wanted to see Juanita, and that's the way we signed our papers at the house, you know. And I thought that would be the way, because we had gone up on Saturday morning, too, to check about the house and sign our papers on that. So I wanted to go ahead and continue that way with C. Juanita Bowman. Well, they wouldn't accept it. They said, you have to use your first name, your maiden name, and your married name. So that's the way I worked at Douglas. But when I put my money in the bank, I put it in Cleela Albert Bowman. Well, then a lot of times I'd get a check, Cleela A. Bowman. And I showed them my credentials or whatever you want to call it, that I went 10 weeks back in Lewisport, Indiana, on machine work. And when they seen that I had been working on machine and my grades or whatever you call it, they said, we'll put you on. They just told me that they'll put you on inspection right away.
This was an actual worker. You'd been in a training class?
I had trained during the summer for 10 weeks.
Uh-huh.
And then I started to work in Lewisport on tanks that goes into airplanes. So that would be government work.
Mm-hmm.
There was next building to the post office at that time. The post office has changed now. But it was next building to the post office, and we worked on tanks that they, well, it was about that long and about that wide. I forget
like
what.
A gas tank?
Well, fuel tank, I guess. I just forget how it was fixed anymore. But anyway, they said, we'll put you on inspection right away. So then somebody come, they take me clear back to where the planes were finished up. Well, by the time I got there, somebody else come back there, and they said, this is an inspection where she's supposed to go. So then they took me back to another room, or to another building, and I believe the first inspection was this simple inspection. You inspect different parts, you know. Then they changed me over to another building later on. I can't remember the date, but anyway, for after so long a time. And then I was put on precision inspection, and that's real close inspection. So I had to get tools for that precision inspection. Well, then I worked on the precision inspection the rest of the time. But in between time, I had to send back to get my marriage license. I had to produce that. But I had left that back home with some of the family because I didn't bring it out with me. Didn't think I'd have to have it.
In the interview, they asked
yes,
you that?
Yes, I had to have that in the interview. But I told them that I'd have it the following week because I telephoned home and I said, tell them send me my marriage license as quick as you can. And if I couldn't have got it from the folks, then I could have had my former lawyer to go across to the courthouse and got me a duplicate. So I would be all right that way. That way I could get it quicker. But they accepted what I said. And let's see, what else did we? My birth certificate. I had it.
How long was the interview? Do you remember? How long did you talk to them when you went?
It wasn't very long. No, I didn't have to talk very long. I had to wait a little bit, but it didn't talk very long because I had the information about everything that was necessary, except my papers or something like that, like the marriage license, things like that, that I could prove anything that I said to them. So it wasn't very long, so they just switched me. But they examined me, though. They examined me. A lady examined me. Why? I don't know why they examined
me. A health exam?
Yes. Uh-huh. So,
Did you have to take any kinds of tests? Aptitude test?
No, I don't think so. No, because I already had my credentials on working on machinery. I told what type of machinery I worked on. Well, that worked pretty good because I was had training experience on machines, you know. But they didn't put me on machinery. The inspector was the best thing they could do because I could sit down. Oh, that was wonderful. That was the best thing I could get into. I was surprised that I was lucky to, but my sister had to work on Riveting. She was Rosie the Riveter. Her name was Rosetta, middle name, but she was what they call Rosie the Riveter. And my daughter was the Riveter, too. I couldn't have took that because it just shaked the daylights out of me. Then, I forget, I got to work about probably a year or so on the afternoon. Well, I picked up a paper one day, and it come out that a man lived over here on about two streets over had used his little 12-year-old daughter. And that was in the paper. So I took that paper and went up to my supervisor, or the head. There's two or three supervisors, but your main supervisor. And I said, is the possibility that I can get changed over today? I said, I cannot leave my daughter home by herself, and she was just a young girl, too, in the first grade of school. And I said, it's not right. And I said, I'm afraid to leave her home. I said, I might be able to trust her, but I can't trust maybe somebody else. And I said, is there any chance I can get changed over? Well, the first man, he didn't want me to change over. He said, no, you just go ahead and stay on this. He wanted two women to be put on days because they belonged to the union. I wouldn't join the union. Well, they resented that. That goes against you if you don't join the union. Well, I wouldn't join the union because I said, I'm a free person and I don't like to be forced to hold a job. Maybe I would have in time, but I wasn't made up my mind I wasn't going to at that time. So then I went to another supervisor, and I said to him, I think his, if I recall, I can't read for sure, I think his name was Johnson. The first supervisor was, they call him Red. I can't tell you their names. Anyway, I went to Mr. Johnson. He said, yes, you come on after or on daytime to my department, but then I had to go to another building, which was all right with me. Just so I forget who sent me over to the other supervisor, because he could take me on. And he was the best supervisor anybody could have, because within 1 month's time, he gave me my first raise, and another month's time, he gave me my second raise. If I remember, I think I got three raises from him, and the first guy wouldn't give me any, because I wouldn't join the union. Well, that's not right. I don't care what anybody says, but you have to do what they tell you. You have to put up what they tell you, in other words. And a lot of things like that has happened to me because I don't think it's fair, but what can you do? And though I was so thrilled to think that I got my raises like I was supposed to get. You see, I was due to them other times, certain time of year, or certain time, whatever it was. And so then I got to stay in the last building then. And that was three buildings I worked at. I think the first was 2, 4, and 13, if I recall. I'm just not too sure, but I think that's what it was. Then I worked from that time until in August 1945, but I can't tell you the exact date of that, whether it was 25th or what it was. I haven't found any papers that I could recall, you know. But so that's what happened up there.
Before you went to work there and you were just signing up, what were your expectations about what the job would be like? Did you think about it ahead of time?
No, I just decided that whatever they put me on, I'd do the best I could. That's the way I always worked. Anywhere I ever tried to get a job or work, that's the way I've always done. Because I didn't know what to apply for or anything. Some says, well, you apply for filing, you might have to use a file. Instead of going to the, what do you call it, file those papers, you know. Now, some of them got stung on that. Well, I'd heard that beforehand, but I let them put me on whatever they had to put me on. So I didn't have any idea what to ask for. I just asked for a job, and so when I filled my paper down of all my experience and what I had, well, they seemed pleased over that. So they took me on, and whatever they paid me, I had to accept. So that's the way it was.
Did you have to bring things into work when you started to work, like tools, or what kind of preparations did you have to make?
I didn't have to make any preparations at first, but when they put me on precision tools, or precision inspection, then I had to pay for my own tools. But we could go to the tool, they call it the tool crib, and take out tools that we used before, any tools that we had to use before. So I never had to pay for it until I could keep whatever I bought, you know. So I had those little, you see, I forget the name of them anyway, but anyway, I had to have a precision, several different types of tools. But to tell you the truth, I don't remember what they were. I've got them around here somewhere. I'd have to hunt them up to find out what they are, because I don't recall.
What did you wear when you worked there?
I had to wear slacks. I had to go up and buy slacks, and I quit wearing dresses. I even wore slacks to church. But, we all had to wear slacks. That was one of the main things, and I had to buy. And when I come back on Saturday, I had to go up and buy a pair of slacks. And then the next week, I think I bought three pairs in cream time.
Had you worn pants before?
No. Well, I had, during 1918, I run a huckster wagon, what they call a huckster wagon, and I wore overalls then. I'll show you a picture in a little bit. But I wore overalls then, but I never wore slacks before. But after we got used to wearing slacks, then we take cold if we change back the dresses, so I quit buying any dresses, so I wore slacks all the time. So that wasn't too bad. I didn't mind the slacks.
Did it take you a while to adjust to them?
Mm-mm, no, because I'm quick that way to get used to things that way. That don't bother me at all. Clothes don't bother me at all. Whatever we had to wear, what I thought I'd wear. Now, when I went to work at the VA hospital, we had uniforms that we had, but we didn't have to pay for them. The hospital paid for them. And we didn't have to clean them. We go and wear them daily in the change, and they had laundry people to do the laundry. But I was thankful that I got to be inspector, because that was really the best job that I could have had. I didn't care for the filing, go to filing cabinets or anything that way. But I enjoyed that inspector, and I hated to give up the job. But when they laid the first big bunch off in August, I forget it was about 25,000 more or less anyway. Then the second layoff, they laid me off, but they did give me a chance that I could go to Santa Monica and work over there on the assembly line, what they call assembly line. Now, I don't know what that contains, because I never paid much attention, but they offered me a job on the assembly line. Some people went over there, but I could not go because I had my family here, and my sister did have an apartment, but then what good would it do me to go over there and stay in her apartment when my family's here and I need to be here with my family? So I had to give it up, so then I drew unemployment twice. They let me draw twice.
Okay. Before we talk about that, I'd like to go back to the first day that you went to work at Douglas. And I want to ask you how you felt when you walked into the plant for the first time.
Well, it was, the lights and everything was really something new. But I enjoy something like that. It's a new, like I say, new beginning in life or something. But the lights really got me more than anything. They was, they were so nice and everything. You see, we had the blackout, and I never missed lights until I come out here and experience the blackout, and that's the most depressing thing. No street lights or anything, you couldn't see nothing. Well, I like lights, and boy, when we got the lights back, I never appreciated anything so much in my life as I did the lights. But those lights were different, you know, and I had to get my glasses changed for different types of lights. I don't know what to call them, but they're kind of a bluish tinge or something. I guess they still have the same. But they were a different type of light than I ever used to. And when I walked in, it was an enormous place, you know, and I was anxious to see everything around. I observed more at that time. Now I can go in places and I don't even observe much, but I did it that time because I was anxious to see what other people were doing. Well, then when they brought the parts to me, they'd bring the parts to me, and then I would check them, you know. And then they give you a steel bar, real thin, about the size of my finger, with your number on it. They had a number on it, and each piece that you inspected. So that was, but the first day was really nice. And I'm not hard to meet people, you know. It's easy for me to meet people because I'd worked in public ever since I was a little kid. And I could meet anybody. There was two or three that worked with me in the same booth. So we got along real good. One of them, though, she liked Roosevelt, and I said something about Roosevelt one day, so we kind of tangled a little bit. So I said, well, I'm going to tell you something. I said, I don't argue on religion, I don't argue on politics. So we got along all right then. But you can't, some people you can't say anything, you know, and you can't say too much. I said, I have my viewpoints, and I have a right when I go vote. I vote for whom I please, and nobody can do anything.